White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 582.
Hey guys, this is Cole Kublik from WJOX in Birmingham and the SEC Network, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick!
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with thewareaglereader.com and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, you out there in podcast land, you are our Patreon.com family, and we couldn't have done the things we've done the last few days without you, and we thank you. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we are back. We had a big weekend on the road. The AU Wishbone road game, road trip is in the books. It has been done. Other than a couple of hours on Saturday where some guys were running around on some grass with a ball, other than that, it was a pretty much a success, would you not say?
Absolute success other than that period. So,
a lot of fun was had. Food was eaten, dare I say consumed, and a lot of walking, a lot of looking at stuff, a lot of talking to people. One of the great people we got to talk to, my longtime friend over the internet, and finally got to encounter him in real life, Mr. Trace Shelton, the big Texas A&M fan and grad. Trace, welcome aboard the AU Wishbone. We're so glad to have you.
Man, thanks for having me. And yeah, I would say as much as I enjoyed getting the win, it was the highlight of my weekend was definitely meeting you guys in person.
Well, we appreciate that. And same here. Yeah, Trace and I very quickly go way, way back to like the mid-90s. I started the Avengers website. We had a mailing list, and you were one of the early people to jump on board, and we had many years of great conversations there. Of course, now, like everything else, it's moved to Facebook and whatever, but we've been talking cool stuff, movies, comics, whatever, for 25 years now, thereabouts.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a strange thing. I was trying to explain it to someone, and they said, you know, I think it's a product of the times, right? Because we were all so excited that the internet was born and we found all these people that were interested in all these the same things as we were, right? So it was an instant community.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was when everybody was running out finding, you know, there was this show I liked back in the mid-70s that 15 people watched. I'm going to find a group for that or make one. Yeah, so, and we were bonded over our Avengers fandom, which was awesome. So little did we know there'd be a giant movie franchise coming, you know, and it'd be the biggest, coolest thing in the world now. We never could have seen that coming. This is back in the day when we were watching like the terrible cartoons and going, why are they ruining this property when it could be so good, you know?
Back then we were on the fringes. Now we're in the mainstream.
We are mainstream. That is right. Well, Trace is with us to talk a little bit about the A&M game from the other perspective. I thought that would be cool. Have somebody that we like and know that to actually talk about it a little bit. And we're going to get into that in just a second. It's going to be the first thing we do. But, John, I just wanted to point out, because I don't think we've really talked about this. You know, every Monday night after we finish recording this show, I go and do the editing and get it uploaded to Podbean. And one of the things that I have to do is it gives me like six boxes to click, what do you call the keywords, mm-hmm. right? And one of them is basketball. And last little while, I haven't been clicking on the basketball button. But tonight, when we finish this show, I'm going to click on the basketball keyword because tomorrow, or I guess today, as people are listening to it probably after midnight, basketball season officially starts on the Plains. We are playing Morehead State. Save your jokes. We're playing Morehead State on Tuesday night, and we are playing Louisiana Monroe on Friday. So what are you excited to have basketball back?
Very excited. I mean, Auburn's basketball team's been really good this year. We got a lot of good players returning and a lot of signees and transfers. And we're going to be a legitimate top 15 NCAA tournament kind of team. So I'm excited for the season to start. I think like a lot of years when you have a new batch of players, the first few games can be rough. Mm-hmm. There could be some ugly patches, and I'm not worried about how things look until you know a few weeks from now. At that point, you know, with the Bruce Pearl and the staff should have the team kind of gelling and coming in the right direction. But just from now, just enjoy the, you know, kind of the team playing and some fun will happen along the way. And then there'll be two, three or four other plays where you're like, oh my gosh, what are we doing?
Win ugly, but just win, baby.
That's right.
And yeah, this is almost an entirely new team because with Alan Flanagan hurt, I think like Devin Cambridge is one of the only players we have back. And I mean, you know, Devin Cambridge, but we got some big time coming in. It is in a time when our football team is kind of going, I don't know what's going on here. It's nice to know that basketball is coming because, and I never thought I'd say that as an Auburn person, right? I never thought I'd say the day, man, I'm glad basketball is here. Oh, you know, we've been the Vanderbilt of football, of basketball for a long time, the SEC, but with Bruce, it's our time now, so we'll see. Anyway.
That's right.
In the meantime, we got to talk about Texas A&M game. Let me see. What we want to talk about, I guess, first with Trace is, so Trace, from our perspective, I think John and I, and if he disagrees, he can certainly say, from our perspective, it seemed like it was a very close, very even, hard-fought game. I mean, it was 3-3 at halftime, for crying out loud. And it just seemed like, to me at least, in the second half, that the Auburn offensive line's issues caught up with them, and our inability to throw passes to wide receivers caught up with them. And then, of course, when it was 9-3, because A&M had marginally more offense than we had, at that point we had the critical turnover that pretty much sealed the deal. So how did you see it? Was it similar to that, or am I seeing it through orange glasses or what?
No, I think I saw it the same way. In fact, I went back and rewatched on TV and just to kind of get some perspective. And yeah, I mean, it was dead even through the first half. Neither team could really move the ball. And I think in a lot of ways, these teams are very similar to one another in that A&M doesn't really do that much with its wide receivers either. There's not we have some raw talent out there, but it's not, you know, it's not seasoned. You guys kind of are in the same seem to be in the same predicament. They're both run heavy. We both have quarterbacks that can be a little mercurial at times. And we both have really strong defenses. And so it seemed to me like it was even Steven at the half.
Yeah. John, what are you thinking?
I think a big thing was the, you know, at the end, late in the first half, Auburn had two drives where they pinned A&M deep and got the ball back around midfield. And I felt like that's when the Texas A&M defense really kind of stepped up and took over the game. Because those were two drives when Auburn started about the 50, and you felt like it was still 3-3. Those were drives when Auburn needed to get some points out of when you start that far up. Mm-hmm. And I think the net on those two drives was negative yardage. So I think that was really the point when, you know, the offense kind of, you know, didn't come through when it needed to, when it couldn't get anything going. And I give a lot of credit to the Texas A&M defense. I thought they were well coached and well prepared, and they seemed to know everything that was coming before it happened.
That's the truth. Yeah, and yeah. I mean, I would just say, and I'll add to that just that they, yeah, their defensive line was able to get pressure on Bo, and we couldn't get any pressure on Calzada. And it felt like our receivers were wearing A&M defensive backs as jackets, it seemed like, in terms of they couldn't get any separation at all. And we tend to blame it on we have basically C-list receivers as our main receivers right now because all of our A-list receivers went off last year to the NFL or whatever, like Seth Williams and Flash. Did you see it similarly?
Yeah, I mean, on a rewatch, I definitely thought, like John said, you guys were winning the field position battle in the first half. If Auburn had two really strong drives, one was the mm-hmm. second drive of the game. Which went 14 plays, 62 yards, I believe, and one was the first drive of the second half. So it seemed like they came out and the coaches had a plan, and to my eyes, they were kind of keeping our defense off balance with, you know, go this side. Okay, now we're going to do a run when you think that we're going to throw. And then for whatever reason after that, it just didn't – the momentum wasn't there. You guys had some crucial – drops that should have been caught.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, a couple of ones that were reviewed, like they thought that you caught it and then you went back and the guy didn't catch it. Really stalled out on some drives. And then we were able to, I guess, in the second half, kind of get get some things going with our running game and get those three field goals.
What did you think when Calzada got hurt, and then what did you think when he came back in?
Well, when he got hurt, to be honest, I was so high up in the stadium that I couldn't tell what happened. I rewatched it on TV. It was a brutal hit. He stood up. He couldn't move his arm, his left arm. I got a text from a friend while I was at the game, said, yeah, they think it's a collarbone. Mm. I'm thinking he's not coming back. Like, he's done for the season.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
And so apparently he had dislocated his shoulder, and they popped it back in on the field.
Eesh.
And took him over to the sideline, and I guess waited to see if he felt okay. And he did. I mean, it was gutsy, man. I mean, what can you say about the kid? He's gutsy. He's not the greatest player, but he's gutsy.
I give him a lot of credit for coming back in, 100%.
Yes.
But also, like, we saw this last week with Matt Corral. He went off the field. He got the magic drug shot, and he came back in the game. And he was fine. And I feel like Calzada got some of that in the injury tent, too. Like, you take this, you'll feel good until the game's over.
Yeah, I was even reading one of our resident experts on texags.com, which is kind of the fan site for A&M, said, hey, we're not out of the woods with this thing. Like, those injuries can be much worse later on after the damage is felt. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. We'll see what happens this week.
Eesh. Well, I hope he's okay, because he did show a lot of guts by getting back up and coming to that game. And he was tough. I mean, he took some hits in that game and kept going. And as
we pointed out, John, didn't throw an interception this game.
No, and that's the big thing. He had been throwing an interception every single game, and I felt confident that one was going to come to Auburn in this game, and then he didn't. So
yeah, that was amazing. On a rewatch, there was really only one ball that was almost picked, and that was the 2-point conversion.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys thought he had the ball.
Absolutely.
He had the ball, and then suddenly our guys got the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought he was going to run it back 100 yards, and it was going to be 18-5. It's going to be the final score. That's a good football score, 18-5. As weird of a game as it was anyway. So what would you say, Trace, from your perspective, what is the strength of A&M's offense, and what was Auburn doing to kind of limit A&M for so long, in your opinion?
Well, our strength is the run game and our tight end play. You know, our tight end, I think he dropped three passes in the first half. He's usually the most sure-handed guy we've got. Our other second most sure-handed guy, Anaya Smith, had a third down drop. And so, to me, it felt like Auburn was saying, we're not going to let you run the ball. We're going to make you throw it, Calzada, because we know you're really a 55% mm-hmm. passer. And although, I mean, watching the game, we didn't really have that many guys open, to be honest. I mean, watching all the different angles on TV, you could see that your defensive backs were covering our guys very well, and so I don't think Calzada was necessarily missing a lot of open men. And I'm not really sure. It felt like maybe our offensive line started to either they figured something out or they just warmed down a little bit from being on the field so much in that second half.
Yeah, and was able to start moving the ball on the ground. From my perspective, I felt like the A&M passing game was working just fine, and they were rolling up and down the field, and we were having to dig in the red zone to bring a drive to a stop over and over and over. And I mean, I told Jonathan, this feels like Penn State all over again, where we had, like, I don't know if you know, Trace, but the Penn State quarterback went 12 for 12 on us passing in the second half up there. And I'm like, oh, here we go, right? We're going to play this soft zone and stop the run, and they're just going to pass up and down the field, and we're going to make another mediocre quarterback look like Joe Montana or something. But we seem like we kind of clamped down a little bit. I don't know. So do you have any other questions game-related for Trace, John, before I ask him some other game day-related stuff?
I guess my question is, from the Texas A&M perspective, how surprised were they at the level of kind of defensive dominance and holding Auburn to 3 points?
I think we were – semi-surprised. We came into the game fourth nationally in scoring mm-hmm. defense. We've been playing, although we gave up 38 to Alabama, we were opportunistic in that game. We got some key stops. And then with obviously Missouri and South Carolina, we shut them down. Obviously Auburn is light years better than those teams. So I think most of us thought that this game would probably, like you guys thought, that it would be a close game somewhere in the 20s, like, 24-21, 28-25, something like that. And I think both defenses just had a better game plan going in than maybe any of the rest of us thought they would.
I don't think anybody saw 3-3 at the half coming.
No.
That was maybe the Braves in the World Series, but not, you know, that was just odd. So Trace, tell us a little bit about what we were seeing there in terms of the game day at A&M and Kyle Field, because it really is something that you guys are proud of, and rightfully so. It's quite a thing. And I don't think that, because, you know, A&M's only been in the conference for, I guess, you know, 10 years now, so not a lot of people have fully understood it yet. So what would you tell Auburn people that they would get? What would they see and what would they experience if they got to come like we did?
Well, I think that's an interesting question, because you guys seem to have a different experience than what I thought you would. And that may be because of the acoustics in the stadium. I'm not really sure. But, you know, we, in our minds, we're a very loud stadium. We're when we come in as freshmen, before we even step on campus, we're taken off to a retreat where they teach us all the yells, which I think there's probably, I don't know, 8 or 10 or 12 of them. And then they teach you how to yell. Like, you kind of put your hands on your knees and you bend over a certain way to project your voice. And so there's a lot of emphasis placed on noise when the other team is on offense. And so I felt like, you know, the Alabama game was extremely loud. And I think you could hear that on TV. And I think you could see it in Alabama. They couldn't even snap the ball. They had to have the guard touch the center to snap the ball. For the day game with Auburn, I didn't think it was quite as loud as it normally is.
That happens in daytime for sure.
I think it was really loud in the second half when Auburn was on, like, especially when Auburn was on third down, it was loud. Like, there's no way they could hear anything on the field. That was intense loud.
Yeah, I think that to me, that was sort of the effect of the day game. It's like first and second down. All right, we'll take a little break. You know, it's kind of warm. Although it was a nice day, but it felt hot in the stands.
Oh, the sun. It was just the raw sun was beating down. Yeah. I had my jacket hood over my hat, and the jacket spread out to block the sun. And it was like the fourth quarter, but finally it went behind the stand. Trace, where we were, you and I have chatted a little bit about this online, but for the listeners, where John and I were sitting was just above the little miniature Auburn band, right? We only brought like 8 or 9 guys. We were right behind them, and we were kind of in a cave where, like, we had a roof partially over us, walls partially on the sides of us, and then, you know, obviously the floor. And we had, if you looked right up above us, there was just a row of like 20 concert speakers, like giant cabinet speakers, all the way aimed right at us from the ceiling. And so between every Auburn play, we would just hear this, and you couldn't hear the band, you couldn't hear the crowd. All it was like being in a disco with the DJ just cranking everything to 12, you know what I mean? And so I was mad because we were missing out on the hearing our band. We couldn't hear our band that was 20 feet in front of us. We couldn't hear your band. We couldn't hear the crowd. And that, you know, the only time we could really hear the crowd was like after we would, you know, they would cut that noise off right before we snapped the ball. So we could hear the crowd right before they snapped the ball to Bo. And that was when we could tell how loud it was. And that was what John was talking about, when we could really, in other words, on those key plays he was talking about, when they'd cut off that electronic noise, it was still loud. But I was just really disappointed. And I said, as I told you before, Auburn has started adding all kinds of artificial music in between plays too. And I don't like that trend. It's like the universities have decided, you're not loud enough, fans. We need loud to win the game, and we're just going to take it out of your hands. And that, to me, is just not fair by anybody. I don't like it.
Yeah, and I felt insulted by it when they first brought it in, because they're doing things now where they're saying, make noise, it's third down or whatever. And I'm like, dude, we're Aggies. Like, we've been doing this for years.
Yeah.
We don't need to know. We don't need to be told it's third down. You know, we make plenty of noise without the DJ. You know, everything I've read is that, you know, they brought the DJ in to make it cooler for the kids. Yeah. But certainly where I was sitting, the music was certain, you could hear it, but it wasn't as deafening, it sounds like, as where you guys were sitting.
Well, because
it was really a product of the speakers.
Yeah, we were right under this ceiling of them, and it was just, yeah. I think if we'd been out in the open air, we would have had a different experience, but it just kind of worked out that way. You know, you're talking about they take you off and teach you how to do these yells and everything. You know, if you go to the University of Georgia, they take you off on the first day and teach you how to
smoke weed every day. Oh, my God!
Look, I tell you, I say this every year. I say it again. Half my high school went to Georgia, and half of them funked out the first year because they had too much fun. So,
and I taught at Georgia Perimeter in Gwinnett County, and I got all of your classmates or your kids of your classmates that were flunking out and came to take my classes to get their grades back up so they could go back to Athens. I was part of that loop, man. I was turning them back around and sending them back to Athens every time. So. All right. Well, Trace, I guess we're going to let you roll here, but we really, really, really appreciate coming on. It's great to talk to you, and it was so good to see you there, and it just made an extra special thing out of the trip. So that to have somebody that I knew and now that John knows that was there and get to see and everything just was really a special bonus. So,
yeah. Well, thanks so much again for having me on. And to me, that's one of the things I was so excited about coming into the SEC is seeing some of my friends that, you know, live in the South or went to school in the South at some of these games. So hopefully that'll continue.
Well, we love having A&M in the conference. There's no doubt about that, right, John? I mean, it's just it's a perfect fit. It's a great fit.
It was very nice to meet you, Trace, and we appreciate your hospitality. That was really great.
Thank you.
Thanks. And right. You guys know, as Texas comes into the conference, you'll be playing that smoke weed every day, even more often.
Look, horns down.
There you go.
We can teach everybody to do that.
There you go. Well, as I said, A&M and Auburn have a lot in common, and we need to stick together against Texas and Alabama's the world because they both have issues that we have to deal with. The good Lord anointed us to keep them in line, and that's our job. Trey, somebody said the other day, some Alabama fan said on Twitter, we're going to go and lose to that team, and you know the other team to Auburn, basically. And he says it's a program that only exists to try to beat us every year. And I said, you know, I'll take it. If you put that label on us, I'll take it. If our purpose in life is to try to beat Alabama every year, yeah, I'll take that. That's fine. 11 warm-up games to play them is fine with me.
Yeah, so, that's how we felt about Texas for many years, and I'm sure that feeling will return.
There you go. All right, we will talk to you. Man, maybe we'll have you on again. We'll talk to you again, but we'll have you on again maybe to preview the game next year. Sound good?
Sounds great. Thanks, all guys. Right.
See you.
Talk to you later.
All right, that was cool. Good to have Trace on. It was really fun to hang out with him a little bit in College Station, John.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. And again, he would invite us to tailgate with a bunch of Texas A&M fans on their drill field. And so we got to meet a bunch of Texas A&M fans and talk to them and then get their perspective. And I'm just going to say this before we get back into the game, all that stuff about like they don't care, they don't think about Texas, they don't care, but that's they hate Texas.
Sure.
And they don't want them to be in the SEC. And if they're going to be in the SEC, they can't wait to get them in here and watch them get crap beat out of everybody. So
yeah. Yep. All right. So let's see. Anything else we want to say about the road trip or the, I know we can have a little bit talk about the game of stuff that we thought, but anything else about the road trip? I'm glad we got to do it.
Yes, I am too. It was really great. And again, it was great to spend time with Van. Of course, we hadn't seen each other since the 19 Georgia game. And it was fun to record stuff in person. We hadn't ever really done that before other than the live shows at the bookstore. So this was fun that way. And it was fun to just hang out and get to see a different SEC campus and walk around and see the sites there before and during game day. That was really nice.
I tell you how much technology keeps advancing is that just a couple of years ago, we would have had a hard time doing all that in a timely way. But I went out and specifically got a new iPhone a couple of months ago with tons of memory and everything, you know, top of the line, just so I could use it. We were recording our video and our audio, and I was uploading it to YouTube, uploading it to, you know, whatever, bringing it back and putting it on the computer and uploading it to Podbean. So it was really cool to be able to just go around and do stuff like that. You know, whenever we had an opportunity, and it went about like I thought. The one thing we didn't do now that I look back and realize I kind of dropped the ball on, we did a couple of car videos, but I wish we had done one more that was just not so A&M related and just kind of a fun conversation that we could have recorded maybe for the White Rocket show or something, or for this show. But, you know, along the lines, because originally my plan was to kind of do the men in kilts thing and just have, like, be funny. And we had some good conversations like that. We just didn't record them because we weren't trying, you know. We were just enjoying having conversations. So, but other than that, though, I think everything went pretty much according to plan. And hopefully everybody – and by the way, we did get a number of messages and tweets and emails of people saying that it added to their experience this weekend to kind of keep up with what we were doing and listen to our reports and everything and watch our videos. So that made me feel good to know that there were people out there – that were appreciating it and it added value to the weekend, you know?
Absolutely. So. And if you have suggestions or feedback about if we do this again, what we should do differently or, you know, what kind of content is better or worse or that kind of stuff, let us know.
Yeah. We were able to get good tacos at Torchy's on Thursday night and good barbecue at Fargo's on Saturday at noon. And we got kind of so full of all that food that we weren't really dying to eat anymore for a while. But and then we got Cane's obviously on Saturday night. So
that was consolation meal. We treated ourselves after the game.
Yeah. So and it was so good. So we did have three pretty darn good meals. Plus Trey fed us a little Chick-fil-A and stuff, and that was awesome too. So what do you want to say about the game? You want to apportion some blame, and I'm here for it. So fire away.
So this is again something we do sometimes when Auburn loses, and it's. We're trying to understand why we lost and the apportion of blame. People ask us to do this. Who should we point the finger at, right? Why did we lose? And so I want to walk through this a couple of things. So the first thing is what I said to Trace. Again, I think we need to give a tremendous amount of credit to Mike Elko, the Texas A&M defensive coordinator, and their players on defense. They had a week off. They used it well. They knew everything we were going to do and everything we might do off of that even. They continually stopped us on first and second down, and we were always in third and long. And then on third down, they brought pressure and disguised it really well. We weren't sure often who was coming, but somebody was coming generally, and that person often got, you know, clean, free run into the backfield, and that created a lot of problems and a lot of rush for Bo Nix to get rid of.
And that was not Bo's fault, which is the first thing people need to realize.
Yeah, so we're getting to him. So
I'm just saying, Joe Montana or his name, Patriots Buccaneers guy, wouldn't Brady. Do any. Brady wouldn't do anything if you had that kind of offensive line play.
They if they have a free runner coming, they throw the ball away too. So, so again, on the apportionment of blame side, I think some of it needs to go to Bobo. You know, clearly teams that have less talent than Auburn moved the ball and scored more than 3 points than A&M. You know, Mississippi State did, Arkansas did, you know, some other teams did. So we should have done better than that. We should the offense had been moving well. We should have, you know, had backup plans that we could pull out that had some chance of success if the things we were doing weren't working. And they tried some things, but it seemed like everything we tried didn't work. So that again,
or catastrophically failed and gave up a touchdown.
Yeah, or made it worse. So. Bobo deserves some blame because he came up with a plan that then we went out and tried to execute and didn't get anything. I do think Bo deserves some of the blame after we'll go back and watch the game some. It was not his most accurate game, and I do think the pressure got to him after the first half. I think there was if this is one of those games on the road where I think his composure was a problem. We saw him yelling at receivers. We saw him, you know, kind of having some body language frustration stuff. And I think they, you know, Texas A&M did a really good job of kind of bottling him up and that kind of stuff. We saw him, you know, he was fussing at the ref at one point about what he thought was a late hit or whatever. And at one point, you know, he ran off the field on second down and they had to run back out for third down because he lost track because it was a penalty or whatever. So I think he didn't have a great game, but this was not a game. I mean, we talked about it during the game. We had the discussion.
Yes.
Is it worth putting Finley in?
We did.
And I felt like with the way that their defense was playing and our offensive line was not blocking them, that it wouldn't help to have Finley in the game. It was a little bit like early in the season. We talked about having Bo and his ability to run around, you know, keep plays alive mattered. So the next a portion of the blame piece is the offensive line. And they did not have a good game for them. The current players in the team did not play well. Again, Brandon Council was out and hurt. Our right tackle, you know, got hurt during the game, Brett Ham, and came back and played some more. And then they were rotating guys at other spots. As a group, they did not play a great game. They, you know, I think there were some times when they didn't pick up, guys that were rushing. There were times that Texas A&M only rushed three or four guys and still got great pressure. And that's not good. But also I think this is one where I go back to, we had some discussions about it, like in 2015 and 2016 about how it was the quarterback problems were the result of kind of past quarterback recruiting being bad. And I think this is like the offensive, we talked about last year, the offensive line kind of being a limiting factor. I think this is the same.
Yeah.
I think they, you know, they just weren't very good on Saturday. I think there's a limit to how good they could be. And I think it's the same with the receivers. We do not have guys, you know, kind of a number one receivers that can beat a guy, make a tough catch in traffic, can get open against tough coverage. I mean, A&M, again, they knew they were getting pressure on us, so then their defensive backs were all right up at the line of scrimmage. And, Vane was constantly saying, we need to throw it over their head and throw it along. And we did. We needed to do that because they were waiting on any throw that was near the line of scrimmage. And that's where all our throws were.
I didn't understand it. It just seemed like we never had any intention of throwing the ball downfield. And I don't know, maybe Bo was trying or was looking, but he certainly never saw anything down there he liked.
Yeah. Now, we had one pass down the field. It wasn't completed.
Overthrown.
And then Kobe Hudson had two big drops, one early in the game and then one on the fade kind of right in the end zone that he kind of lost the ball. And that was, again, it was a bad throw, but it was within reach. And so those – your receiver and SEC got to make those. But also, they were, you know, we were behind the offense or looking straight on at the offense a lot, and there were not a lot of open guys.
No.
You know, they were not receivers running open, whether Bo had time or not. And that's somewhat on them. And some of that is on Bobo, too, because he's calling the plays designed to get them open. But if you're the guy's up on you and you can't get away from him or can't get up to the line of scrimmage, that's on you. So. And then when they did, again, there were a few drops in this game, and they hurt because they were so limited. But overall, this was a terrible offensive performance. It was the worst one in a long time. I mean, since one of those terrible Clemson games or since 2012. Like, that's how far back we're going to compare this to offensive performance. So, to me, if you want to portion it out, I think you could probably divide it equally among – the groups I just said, Bo Nix, the offensive line, the receivers, so that you could probably spread it pretty thin and give 25% to each of them.
They also had some interesting things going on in terms of offensive personnel. We played Shivers a lot in the first quarter, and then I don't remember him being on the field again.
We did, again, because I think we were in third and long a lot, and I think he's the third and long back. He's always in there. And we tried to do some other stuff to get him the ball.
Yeah.
And it didn't work well. And they were, you know, we ran those little swing passes to the running backs a lot, and they were just waiting on that stuff. So, you know, I think we got to go back and look at that and have some, you know, some kind of different options. You know, the tight ends they weren't making plays. Texas A&M covered them up pretty well and didn't let them do anything. So I think
that's true.
No, you're right. In terms of that, though, in terms of the personnel stuff, there was a lot of Shivers in the game.
We noted that the top four receivers were all running backs and tight ends, which is not saying a lot that they were the top four. And that, what was it like, all of our quote-unquote actual wide receivers combined caught four passes, like a one, a two, and a one. Yep. So three wide receivers. That's not going to get it, no. What about the defense?
I mean, again, you're playing a top 15 team and you allow 12 points. Mm-hmm. You know,
in their own house,
on the road, you have 12 points against a top 15 team. That's good. That's it. I mean, that's success to me.
Yeah.
So I think as the game went along, you could tell the defense was kind of hanging on by their fingernails at some point, right? That they were trying to just hold on and hold on and hold on and hope that the offense could make a play. But it also goes back to something that we talked about some in the 2019 season, where you pointed this out. That, like, at some point, the offense needs the defense to help them. And we needed the defense to force a turnover earlier in this game. We needed them to get pressure on Calzada and to force him to turn the ball over when the offense is really struggling. They needed that.
That was the most controversial thing I've said in the last 2 years, and it bears a little explanation very, very quickly. It was controversial. I caught a lot of heat because everybody was saying the defense is doing as much as they could. Why isn't the offense helping them? And about halfway through the season, I said, at some point, you have to accept that the offense is what it is. And if the defense is that great and wants to win, they need to do even more since they're the great unit on the field. And it was just like in 2019. They were great at putting pressure on the quarterback and making stops, but they weren't turning the ball over. They weren't getting defensive scores. And I'm like, if we had forced a pick six or a scoop and score on A&M instead of the other way around, we win that game 10-9. So as good as they played, and as you said, holding them to 12 points on the road, that's success. Unfortunately, it wasn't success for the whole team because they needed to do one more thing that they couldn't do. Yeah. And again, you can say, well, that's on the offense. Well, I agree. But if the offense is what it is, you can't magically make them good. You can have a good defense get a freaking turnover.
Well, that's right. When you know, when you're playing a young, shaky, inaccurate quarterback, you can put extra pressure on him. You could send an extra blitzer to and force him to make a throw he doesn't want to make. Instead, we played coverage and let him make those throws. And he wasn't accurate, especially in the first half, but he got better as the game went along. And I feel like in the early part of the game, especially, we needed to get more pressure on him and try and rattle him a little bit.
Absolutely.
But we didn't do it. So
we missed a field goal, second game in a row at least, which is disappointing. It felt like at the time that felt big. I don't know now that we would have ever gotten in close to scoring again, but
I think it was big. I think it was just big psychologically.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was an emotionally big thing, right?
Yeah. Because they had gone up 6-3, I believe, and that would have tied it again, and we'd have been holding serve with them and saying, okay, you got three, we got three, you got three, we got three. And so it would have held things even, and then maybe we could have been the ones to get, like I said, the defensive score. I mean, we're just, you know, it didn't, and ifs and candy and nuts and all that, but still. We did do pretty well on special teams otherwise, though we did get an over-exuberant killing of a guy after a fair catch, which is, you know, we would have had they'd had the ball like the 4-yard line. Instead, they had it on like the 20.
Right, and that, again, that's an example of nobody thinks about that, but if you don't get the penalty, they're on the 4. It's early in the game, you know, still the first half. I think Calzada's a little shaky, and you're making him pass out of his own end zone, maybe.
Yeah.
Making the punt out of the back of their end zone. So that
might have been your
big penalty.
That might have been your touchdown you're looking for, yeah.
That's right. So that was big that way.
All right. Any other thoughts about A&M? You lay this game to rest.
No, other than, again, I'm concerned about the offense because, again, the second half of Ole Miss, 3 points. This game, 3 points. So 6 quarters in a row without a touchdown now. That's bad. So we gotta pick it up next week.
I just hope – I said on Twitter earlier that I thought that too much was being made out of that because a third of that, we still won the game by double digits. But I do get your point. It's not a good trend. I just hope this game doesn't have lasting – I hope it doesn't beat us twice.
Yes.
Because we've got a very important game against Mississippi State. This is a nice transition here. I didn't plan it this way, but it's working out this way. I'll take it. We have a very important game coming up Saturday against Mississippi State, which I have been saying all season, and particularly the last few weeks, I've been saying this is going to be a harder game than people. Every year people act like Mississippi State. Oh, by the way, I have a very quick rant. I'll hold this under a minute, but here's my very quick rant, all right? Auburn fans, you guys – and I'm as much one of you as – God, we've written 3 books and gone to all these games and have got 2 degrees from there. But Auburn fans are so predictable. We start out a season kind of mediocre, and they're like, oh, I don't know about this coach. I don't know. I don't know about this quarterback. I don't know about this team. I don't know. You win a couple of games, and what do the Auburn fans do? Oh, it's Atlanta, baby. We're going to beat Alabama. Here it comes. We're going to backdoor in the playoffs. We're going to beat Alabama. We're going to beat Georgia in the rematch, and we're going to get into the playoffs. And then you go out and lay an egg kind of again in a very close game against A&M. Oh, I don't know about this coach, John. I don't know about this quarterback. We need to fire them all. It's like such night and day, for crying out loud. I mean, there's it's just all or there's no. I'm sitting here going, we're a pretty good team. We're probably going to go 8-4. That's fine. Or 7-5. That's fine. We'll go to a bowl. It's okay. No, they're either like fire the coach or we're going to the playoffs. There is no middle ground, it seems like. And it drives me nuts.
I agree 100%. Yes. The scenario was there, the schedule and everything worked out in Auburn's favor. That doesn't mean it's going to happen.
No.
Okay? This team is not that kind of team.
No.
And I'm saying, I would have said that before last Saturday. This is not a playoff caliber team. Auburn is a good team. Mm-hmm. They're not a great team this year.
Right, exactly.
And we've talked about the reasons why, the kind of structural issues in the team that prevent that from happening. So I accept what it is, enjoy the games as they happen, and do not get hung up on the playoff thing. That's my advice forever.
I think that there are fans that subconsciously don't want to think that Gus Malzahn had a better first year than Harsin can have. But they got to understand that 2013 team had an offensive line that carried the team all season. They were able to move the ball against everybody, including Alabama. They opened up holes for Trey Mason and for Nick Marshall.
And a bunch of NFL players, the offensive line. So.
Exactly. This team does not have the 2013 offensive line. That team, it's not going to happen because I can't find the button. But it's not. That offensive line is not walking through that door. So you know,
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door.
And that 2013 offensive line is not walking through that door. So.
I wonder how many roasters even know who Kevin McHale is. That really bothers me. he was really good.
Wasn't it his son that was the Tennessee quarterback? No, it was the other Tennessee. It was Danny Ainge. Danny Ainge's son was the Tennessee quarterback in 04 when we went up there and beat the snot out of him. That's right. Okay. So Mississippi State, they're kind of a weird duck. I just watched the 12-minute highlight film against Arkansas. That was a good game. I'll wait and mention it briefly when we get to around the SEC, but that was a back and forth interesting game. As you have said repeatedly that Mississippi State has a defense. And I keep thinking about their unorthodox throwing all over the field offense. And between those two things, they could beat anybody on any given day. Yes. So how concerned should we be?
You should be very concerned. They are, in all the advanced stats things, they're a top 25 team. Okay. So the West is way better than the East. Mm-hmm. The Mississippi State's going to finish fifth or sixth in the West, and they'd be the second best team in the SEC East.
Yeah. They've
already beaten Kentucky. I think they beat Tennessee in a neutral field right now. They'd be the best team in the East besides Georgia, but they're going to finish fifth or sixth in the West. They're really good on offense. We know we talked a lot when Leach got here about the offense and how it takes reps to get it to a place where it's more effective. Now they've had the consistent time with this young quarterback, Rodgers, and the receivers, and they're getting to a good place. They don't try to run the ball at all. They had the fewest rushing attempts in the conference by a lot, but they're pretty good on offense. And they take advantage of teams that try to play them of a generic vanilla zone kind of thing. And then the other thing is their defense is really good. They have a young defense coordinator, Zach Arnett. They play this like 3-3-5 thing. It's funky. The angles are different. It messes with people. It doesn't look like other defenses. And so that kind of takes some extra time to prepare for, and the things they do kind of mess with you. So their defense is really good. And again, it's Mississippi State. They've always had some good defensive players, and they have some on this team. So their defense, this is the thing. Everybody wants to talk about Mike Leach. The defense is the strength of this team. They're very good. And we're going to have to, you know, show up and play better. They're not as good as Texas A&M, okay? But they're good on defense.
Well, they beat Texas A&M.
That's right. And so we're going to have to show up and play much better on offense at home next week to beat this team. The one good thing that I could say is their special teams are terrible, like 110th in the country terrible.
I like it. I like any little crack in the armor I can find. That's good. That's good. They barely lost to Arkansas. I mean, both teams scored touchdowns in the last 2 minutes, and then Mississippi State was kicking a field goal to go to overtime at the last second and missed it.
Yeah,
so
they missed the field goal. They missed three field goals in that game and lost by 3 points, right?
3 points, so. Yeah. There you go. Wow. All right, so how do we play their offense? How do we stop their offense? What can we do?
Again, when they came in the league, everybody's like, oh, we're going to do this thing that Washington did where we play this soft zone and drop everybody back and just play coverage, and that works. And then, because that was the opposite of what LSU did. Remember in their first game, LSU was like, we're going to play man-to-man and just,
they got killed.
You know, our guys are better than their guys. And they ran mesh and screened their guys off and got a gazillion yards. And so then people started doing the zone thing. And Auburn did that last year a lot. But one of the things they did is they mixed it up a lot more and got pressure on it. And so we need to do that again. We can't just sit back and play pressure. We got to have guys coming. We got to get some pass rush, make them uncomfortable. I think that's a big piece of it. And then the big thing is they're going to throw the ball. They're going to complete passes. Do not freak out when they complete passes. But we got to tackle in space, let them complete the pass. They get 4 yards. We tackle the guy. That's what we want. You know, that throw the ball, let him get 3 yards, tackle the guy. That's what we want. Don't let him get in deep passes and then keep him in front of you. Let him catch the ball and tackle it. That's what we want every time. And sometimes, we'll get some pressure on him. We'll shake him up. We'll have good coverage. They won't complete it. They won't be able to get all the way down the field, and we'll force a punt or a field goal. So that's kind of our goal in playing them.
Their passing game is longer passes. Their running game is shorter passes.
That's right.
And you got to play those shorter passes like a running game.
That's it.
Yeah. Do they have a running game?
Not really. I mean, yeah. I was looking earlier at the rushing stats from Mississippi State, and the rushing attempts are just – it's funny. they have 195 rushing attempts, okay? They're 100 behind the next most team, and that's LSU. Like, Arkansas has 415 rushing attempts in the same amount of games. So, like, twice as many.
Wow.
And, again, this is the other thing. They're rushing their average in SEC games is 2.5 yards a carry.
Wow.
So the answer for you, do they have a rushing game? The answer is no.
Not much. No. All right. What can we do on offense to move the ball at all? You say they have a good defense. Is their defense going to be able to do to us what Texas A&M's defense did?
No, I don't think it can do that, especially at home.
Yeah.
But I think we need to come out early and have some confidence. We after that performance, we do not want to come out and go a quarter without moving the ball and scoring. You know what I'm saying? So I think the first drive or two are big in this game. We got to have some stuff we know will work. Against teams that are one-dimensional, they've been really good. They really shut down Kentucky's running game and forced them to throw the ball and kind of took them out of what they wanted to do, and they do that to some other teams too. So I think we have to do the things that we were doing earlier that were working, right? Keep them off balance, use the whole field, throw it to a bunch of different guys. But also, we got to go back to trying to run the ball a little bit better at home. Yeah, they don't have the size or talent on defense that Texas A&M does, and we need to be able to execute the running game and get a little more yards, keep some drives going.
They've got to figure out how to get the running game going.
Yep.
I mean, they've got to get the running game going, especially to keep Mississippi State off the field. That would really be big. All right, so let's look at the keys to winning. You have dominate special teams because that's their weak spot.
At the end, it's a strength of our team and a weakness of their team. So field position, maybe make a big play in special teams. Maybe they're bad at field goal kicking, so hold them to field goal attempts, and maybe they miss a few and some drives stall out. And then I think, again, tackling in space is huge against this team. They're going to have guys open. They're going to throw the ball to them. They're going to catch it. Tackle the guy immediately. I think that's the goal in all this. And then the big thing is we got to score early. We got to move the ball early, score early. I think I want to see us honestly go back to throwing the ball more to the tight ends early. You know, little play, regular play action, and roll blowout, throw to the tight ends. We did that a little bit at the very – on the first or second drive against Texas A&M, but not as much as the game went along. We need to get back to that. We need to get back to running the ball, play action. And then – and like you said, we got to throw some deep shots or every team's going to come up and kind of try to bury our receivers within 5 yards.
Yeah. A little Tuberville ball. A little play action, go to the tight end. Out routes, receivers, whatever. I like it. I think that always was successful for us. Okay. We got to thank the patrons very quickly that got us on the got us to College Station and back, and we could not have done it without you. We had a number of different expenses that we encountered along the way, including I had to go and get like a computer so we could actually edit and publish the stuff while we were in the middle of doing it, and then, of course, all of our other expenses. So thank you guys so much. I felt like that was a good use for some of our patron money, and I'll be paying that all back for a while now, so everybody stick with us. Just because we lost that one game, don't abandon ship, because we got bills to pay here at the White Rocket Studios, but we appreciate you guys. If you want to join the family and help out with that and keep our program going and doing fun things like we just did, which was fun for us, but fun for you guys too, hopefully, just go to www.auwishbone.com, www.auwishbone.com, and join the ranks for as little as a dollar a month, though we appreciate more. You can be part of the crowd. We have to thank, as always, Samuel Salvatore, Chris and Clinton Stewart, Carl Von Drunker, Christopher Burleson, Jeremiah Schumann, and Patrick Hayes, as well as Allison Rich, Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, a.k.a. AU Fan KSC. By the way, that reminded me, so a couple of those names. The Babylon 5 review show is delayed just a couple of days this week. Normally, it would have gone up this morning, but because I was out of town, Andy had something going on, I had something going on, so we're going to get it recorded probably Wednesday night. So look for it Wednesday night, Thursday morning, as soon as I can get it edited. We have to thank Logan Chilton, Matthew Flowers, Mike. I really don't blame John and Van for this loss, Kirshner. Well, thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. I'm glad we did our part. We tried to help the defense.
Thank you, Mike.
Yes.
Not everybody shares that sentiment, but thank you.
Yeah, I'm not. Don't put that evil on me, is my quote. I'm not hearing that. Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, and our one-time anonymous donor. Thank you all. No. Ann Kangian, AU Falling Up, Auburn Tiger Talk, Ben Bloodworth, Chris Thrash, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, Eric Morgan, Bobby, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Lisa Hammett, Science Officer, Mickey B, Old Mrs. Miracle Medical Staff, Algorithm, Paul Miles, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, Tank Hunter, plus... There goes Davis, Valiant Hermes, WDE Richie, Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Body, Auburn Blue, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Brandon the Smith, Brian the Albanese, Cato the Barner, and Chris the Hilton. Coach O is going to end up living in a van down by the river. Coach Satan, Colby Butler, Corey Smyre, Darius Benton, David Simpson, Die Bama, any day now, Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Heather and Yancey Steingraber, Helping Van Upgrade His Insulation, Hugh Anderson. John Needs to Listen to HellBentATL.com. That's your turn, John. Josh Teal, Kevin Kinoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston. This is the year Bo Nix has improved so much under this new offense. He's focused. He's having fun. I wouldn't be surprised if only. Tim Pittman, Timothy, Tony Perry, Weagle 87, Alex Nguyen, and finally Auburn Elvis, Ben Amos, Ben Hanshoe, Ben Riggis, C. Braun, Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Colonel Dad, Construction Tiger, Daniel Barnett, David Smiley, Dibs on the Next Couch Fry, Donate to Luke Deal's Dad if you can, Elizabeth Donald, I got a fever and the only cure is more fades on fourth down. Get some...
That's a good one.
We got a lot of good ones this week. Ice Cream Clone. I'll buy this for a dollar. James Taylor. Jason the Weasel Skull Albrecht. John Stubbs. John Zavachin. John Soundboard. Joey Miller. Joseph Iliff. JT Jarhead. Justin Bean. Kenneth Brent Rains. Michael Halbrook. Michael O'Connor. MVP. Captivating Kathy Bright, who scored us that awesome audio drop from Stan White. Yay, Kathy. Paul Bankson. Per Van's suggestion, Bob Sammons looked in the mirror and still has no idea why he increased his contributions. Okay. Robert Drain, Russell Souther, Ruth, and Darren Sutherland, Spanky Big Boutet, Judd and Vanner Monkey Boys, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Brant Rumble, plus Chris, and our one-time and anonymous donors, even you guys with the wacky names that I don't fully understand. We thank you all. Be part of their ranks. Come up with your own wacky name that you make me read. Go to www.auwishbone.com. All right. I haven't gotten the latest on the Formula One standings, but I'll have them for you next week because there was the Mexican Grand Prix. I think it's probably stayed about the same because it was the same finishers as always, Verstappen and then Lewis Hamilton. We do have a Pulsar Kickstarter for the Pulsar comic book, so go to kickstarter.com and search for Pulsar, and you will see it. It is now fully funded, and we're adding new bonuses for all the people who join in. And if you haven't seen all the stuff John and I posted, it's on the YouTube AU Wishbone channel. Go to www.auwishbone.com and click on Wishbone TV. And finally, we are not doing Guess the Game this week because we have a whole lot of other stuff going on, including the Trace Shelton interview. So Jared will be back next week. I already talked to him about it. He had not put one together anyway, so he was very happy about that. It worked out good for everybody.
But we'll put a plug in here to say send your game suggestions to Yard Sale Artist.
Yeah, because he on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, because it's always a fun segment. And now,
thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun 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 on the AU Wishbone Podcast.
All right, I imagine we got a few. What we got?
All right, first emails from Jacob Fleming, who says, friends, I'm assuming you guys will receive a lot of emails about today's game. I'm not going to use this email to criticize the coaching staff for a lackluster offensive performance, but just want to say thank you, too, for all the access and content. Hopefully we can meet up at a future game more Eagle.
Oh, well, that's awesome. I appreciate it. I tell you what, Jacob and Robin Fleming are two of the best people that we have in our audience, and we have a lot of really, really great people in our audience. We love them all. And I appreciate him saying that. That, again, makes it kind of worthwhile to go to all the trouble of going out there. It was fun, but it's good to know that people enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks, Jacob, and we look forward to meeting you too. All right, the next question is from regular question asker Samuel Salvatore, who says, hello, guys, and War Eagle anyways. He says, isn't it sad that Bo Nix goes from outdueling a possible Heisman candidate QB to getting outdueled by a walk-on QB? Mm. How embarrassing is that for the coaching staff to swallow? Do you know the defense hasn't given up a touchdown in six quarters and the offense hasn't scored a touchdown in six quarters?
Yeah, that first part is kind of lost on the crowd. I feel like they were talking about earlier online, several people, Justin Hokanson and a few others, were talking about when was the last time that we went this long without scoring a touchdown, and it might have been the beginning of the 2003 season.
Mm-hmm.
We went two games and change.
Look, the Georgia Tech game.
Yeah. Yeah,
the Southern Cal game.
Let's don't go there. That's that was the dark times before the Empire.
We are lucky we were not doing a podcast then. Okay.
Yeah, that was not good. What else we got?
All right. Our next question. This one is right up our alley. Are you ready? This is from John Otsuki. He says, John or Van, I did not have fun this weekend. But maybe we could put this loss in context. Which Auburn game that you attended in person hurt you the most? And he says, not the team or the university. He says, for me, it was the Texas A&M in 2014, but I know you'll have several decades more of Auburn fandom to draw on, War Eagle John. This is a perfect AU Wishbone question.
It really
Which
is.
Which game that you attended in person hurt you the most? It doesn't. So the context for the team, the university doesn't matter. But which hurt you?
Well, see, because the ones I think of as hurting me the worst, I saw on TV.
Yeah, but it's got to be I know. The personal one.
I mean, because we can go back to 83 Texas, 88 LSU, 2013 Florida State. I can just reel them off, man. That Clemson game a couple of years ago. But I saw all those on TV. When I think about the ones that I was there, I was really ticked off about losing to Georgia Tech in 2005. Was that the one or 2003? The one that was in Atlanta. I guess that was 03. Yeah, because I had bought season tickets to Georgia Tech to get tickets to that game. And I was sitting with the Georgia Tech scholarship donors. And and the
Probably
students,
some of my relatives.
So. Yeah, and the Tech students were right next to me, just giving me crap the whole game. But I mean, that's really, really personal. It's like just like the 2003 Georgia game when I was sitting right in the middle of a bunch of Georgia students watching us just get annihilated by Georgia in Athens. That's the only game I ever left at halftime. I just didn't want any more of it. I knew it wasn't going to get any better. I knew we weren't going to pull out some miracle. And I was tired of getting personally abused by the people around me. So I'm just like, forget this. I'm gone. But I don't know.
So I think that's the game for you then, right?
It may be, yeah. It's the only one I left at halftime. But, I mean, it was a season that had already gone down the crapper, so I wasn't hurting in terms of what it did to Auburn. I was just personally affronted and ticked off and depressed. And that was a season I was wearing black to the games anyway. You know, so, I'd already kind of – that ship had sunk. It didn't just sail. It sunk. What about you?
It's a good question. I think – you and I talked this weekend. I have very vivid memories of the 1987 Sugar Bowl against Florida State.
Yeah.
Which my family and I went to, and my college roommate, David, went with us. And if you haven't, weren't alive then and you haven't seen that game, Deion Sanders was on Florida State at that time, and Bo Jackson was on the Auburn sideline. This is after he was done, obviously, but he was there, like, on the sideline, firing the team up. And at the end of the game, there was a kind of a blatant pass interference on Florida State in the end zone as Auburn was trying to throw the ball in the end zone to take the lead. It wasn't called. And it was just a terrible missed call.
Terrible.
And we were in that end zone, so it was right in front of us. And then the next play, Deion Sanders intercepted a pass, and then he ran down the Auburn sideline and individually taunted every single person on the sideline, including Bo Jackson.
Unbelievable.
And we were trapped in a dome listening to that stupid chant for the Florida State band the whole time. So
we did an you and I did an episode about that chant and everything back in 13 before we played them.
So my gut is saying that one. There were some other games that I was at that I definitely – that definitely hurt, that weren't pleasant. We were in school. The Florida game where Florida State annihilated us.
87.
It just destroyed us in that 87 year. It was 42-6 or something.
That was our only loss that year. And Tracy Rocker got hurt on the last play. That was rough. I thought of another one that really hurt at the time and still annoys me, and that was that 97 SEC championship game against Tennessee. We led them the whole game. They were supposed to supposed to come in and destroy us. We were supposed to be lucky to get to be their sacrificial victim on their way to like the national championship or something, which they didn't win.
Yeah.
It was Peyton Manning's senior year. Mm-hmm. And we intercepted him. And we turned them over time and time again, and we were beating them. I think we were up like 27-10 at one point, and they came back and they won 30-29. And it, in the fourth quarter, you could just see it was going to be 30-29. Even before it happened, you just could tell, And oh man, and the Tennessee fans were horrible. We stopped at a Waffle House on the way out of Atlanta, and it was full of Tennessee fans and all that orange, and they all laughed at my family when we walked in the door. And so, yeah, that was awful.
Okay, that's a good one, too. All right. Last question is from a regular emailer now and NC State fan. There's Doc Crackham on Twitter.
Okay.
Who says, listener question, what is the Auburn coaching staff need to do differently for the rest of the season to revitalize the offensive production? We can't just keep blowing fantastic defensive performances. Can this be fixed this season, or will we need to hit the portal, cue the soundboard for offensive line and wide receivers?
Yeah, no kidding. Our offensive line is out of order. Our receivers are out of order.
You are out of order! You're out of order!
I think he wants the portal sound.
Oh, well, first we have to decide, we have to diagnose the problem. And the problem is.
You are out of order. You're out of order. You're out of order. The whole
team
is out of order.
Offense. Okay. And then you go over here and first you click this button on the control panel.
Jump gate activate.
No, we don't want the jump gate. We get the Vorlons involved and it all just goes to crap. So instead you hit this button. And that doesn't work. So then you finally find. There we go. There we go. We've gone to the portal. John, that reminds me, we have a momentous change that has occurred on our show. We are no longer talking about NC State as being the team that doesn't actually exist.
We're not. We had a big discussion about this last weekend. We had a Twitter poll, and from now on, the team that we will pick on in relation to this is Rutgers. Congratulations.
Yeah. Congratulations, Rutgers. Knights. Congratulations to Rutgers.
Please clap.
Because now with Rutgers, we're going to
dispel once and for all with this fiction
that they exist, because clearly they don't. We actually did a Twitter poll, and it was Arizona versus Rutgers, and Rutgers won 52-48. Did I ever post our audio of that conversation? Did we do a video of it in the car, I feel like? I feel like maybe that's the one that got away. I got to check.
We recorded that in the car.
Did we do video of it or only audio?
I think we only did audio.
All right. Well, then I'm going to go. I'll see. All right. Well, then no wonder they don't know. All right. All right. So get NC State audio. That'll be a special bonus this week. So in probably tomorrow sometime, that'll go up as a bonus. Or I might even be able to plug it in. I don't know. I don't know if I plug it in here.
No,
show
put it
too
as
long.
A separate thing.
I'll do it as a bonus in a couple of days, yeah. I honestly had forgot. I thought that it went out in the world and was gone, so that's my bad. We had a lot. We were juggling a lot, so.
I do want to go back to his question real quick and say, you know, we can't keep blowing fantastic defensive performances. So we got to improve. We've blown some fantastic defensive performances the last several years. So
yes, we have.
It's very possible to do it again. I think, you know, what is the identity of
this? Is true.
Sorry.
What is the strength of the offense? What, you know, and I think it's that we're kind of multiple and variable, right?
That's as good as anything. Yeah, I think the strength of our offense is getting an occasional good run from one of our backs, getting an occasional good pass to either our tight ends or one of our receivers, and then Bo doing something really cool with his legs. That's our offense.
Yeah, but I think it's those things in a way that the defense can't always tell what's coming. You know what I'm saying? We're kind of like a little of this, a little of that, a little over here, a little over mm-hmm. there, and keep them off balance. Mm-hmm. And that's the way we should be.
Yeah.
So I think if they're not off balance, then we have to do kind of expand the menu. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And keep them off balance with the rhythm and the order of the play calls and stuff, the way we're doing stuff, the formations running things out of, so they can't see everything that's coming.
Yeah, no, that works as much for me as anything, is to say that our strength is just sort of multiple. We're not great at anything, and we're not going to be a super high-scoring team unless we keep playing Akron or whatever. But we have enough, and I mean, you could feel it again. I mean, the one thing I could really feel against Texas A&M was that we could not sustain against a strong defense doing the things we normally do, that they were going to limit us and they were going to bring us up to a fourth and long.
Yes.
It just never felt like we were going to sustain a drive in that game. Like, if you had told me that we would get the ball back at our 20 with 2 minutes to go or 3 minutes to go, and if we score a touchdown, we win the game, then I would have said, I doubt we win the game. Because I just couldn't see us going 80 yards and scoring a touchdown.
No. You're very right on that. All right, that's it for Lister Questions.
That's it. All right. Well, we're going to hop in the rental car again. And like we just did,
let's take a trip around the FTC.
We did. We went pretty far to the outer extreme of the SEC. I guess the outer extremes of the SEC are Lexington and Columbia, Missouri, and College Station and Gainesville. Yeah, pretty much. So Georgia beat Missouri 43-6. I tell you what, Missouri didn't hold Georgia in the 30s like everybody else did. So I consider that a failing on Missouri's part, because I would have said it would have been 34-3 or something. So
Missouri's defense is bad.
Clearly. So, I mean, Georgia's just, I mean, nobody's stopping them, are they?
Again, they could lose to Alabama.
I don't see it. Not after this weekend.
I hear you.
Not after what we saw against LSU.
I think Ohio State could beat them on a good day.
I'm not sure Ohio State's going to beat Michigan, honestly.
They are.
I think that there's a lot of meh in college football this year, other than Georgia, And on any given day right now, anybody can beat anybody. That's how
well,
I say it.
I think it's not just meh. I think there's a lot of variability, right? Yeah. I think as college football fans, we often want teams to be like, okay, I've seen this team play this team, therefore I have a very clear thing in my mind. But it's really about on that day, on that field, how those two teams are formed. And week to week, they're up and down, and if they're on the road or home. So I just think, like, in this, we've seen this in the SEC. There's a whole bunch of teams in the middle that are all kind of about the same.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on where the games are and how they're playing that particular day, what happens.
And the matchups we keep talking about. Are you able to stop the pass? You can stop a passing team. Are you able to stop the run? Are you able to run the ball? It's all about matchups. That's because one of the things that Trace had said in our offline conversation yesterday that made me interested in wanting to get him on was he said, why are you surprised? But he said something to the effect of, he was very kind about it, as always, but he said something to the effect of, why are you that surprised that Auburn lost? We had better athletes all over the field. And I said, that really doesn't enter into it because you had better athletes in Mississippi State and they beat you. You had better athletes in Arkansas and they beat you. This year, it's not about who has the better athletes because Alabama's got better athletes than anybody and they almost lost LSU.
Well, and we've had Auburn teams before that had better athletes everywhere except quarterback and couldn't beat good teams.
That's exactly.
And so I felt like the Calzada thing was such a weakness that it was going to matter more.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's a matchup thing. It's who's good at what and how do you go up against each other like puzzle pieces. We talked about the Arkansas-Mississippi State game. Really remarkable how that played out and not surprising it was close. Alabama beat LSU at home in Alabama 20-14. And LSU, when we turned the TV on in Raising Cane's, my phone, LSU was inside the 10-yard line to win the game. Now, they didn't get it done. Credit to Alabama. But how many rushing yards did Alabama have in this game?
Six rushing yards.
How did that happen?
LSU bottled them up and got a bunch of tackles behind the line of scrimmage, too.
They had to. I mean,
so
gosh.
Again, Alabama's offensive line had a terrible night. LSU, you know, basically blitzed everybody all the time and had guys up in the backfield all the time and kind of kept them off balance and didn't let them get going. And Alabama had a hard time adjusting. But they couldn't make enough plays at the end. They had chances, like you said, again at the end of the game. They were thrown in the end zone. But
they got inside the 10. They didn't make it. Alabama took over, drove out to the 50, and fumbled, and LSU came back again with another chance and couldn't get it done. So when the chips were down, Alabama kind of remembered how to play football, but it looks like it was kind of like the Oklahoma-Kansas game there for a while. Not to say LSU's Kansas, but I mean, it looked like they played down to the competition for three quarters and then kind of woke up at the end.
Yeah. I mean, and again, LSU, they got nothing to lose. The coaching staff's all going to be gone, so they were kind of – like, just roll the dice, throw stuff against the wall. They ran a fake punt. It was like a jump pass kind of thing where the punter ran straight ahead like he was going to run straight into the line and keep running. And right before he got the offensive line, he jumped and threw the ball, and there was a guy standing there about 5 or 10 yards downfield who caught it and ran for the first down. And it was a great play call. But it was the kind of thing you do when you've all been fired, and it's like, what are they going to do, fire us? So.
I got to go watch the highlight. I like to watch those 10-minute highlight reels. And I watched Arkansas and Mississippi State. I haven't watched Alabama and LSU yet because we were on the road. We didn't get to see it. Tennessee beat Kentucky 45-42. I did see the highlights of this one, and it was just back and forth, up and down, man. And Tennessee
is good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just fake. They've been terrible for years and years, and I think the new coach has kind of got them. They have an identity. You know, they're this fast-paced offensive team. Kentucky had 45 minutes of time of possession in this game and lost.
God. Yeah, I did see that Tennessee scores came from like a pick six and a kick return or something. Plays that don't run a lot of time off the clock. And then you just give the ball right back to the other team again.
Well, and when their regular offense goes very fast. I mean, they do the no-huddle thing. They're attacking down the field. So you're right. They had a lot of fast drives and then some drives and the scores that took no time off the clock. So
yeah. That was something. And then South Carolina beat Florida. Yes, you heard that correctly. South Carolina beat Florida 40-17, which is like the score of us beating Georgia a couple of years ago. And what happened with their coaches? I mean, we already knew that Mullen had gotten himself in some hot water over things he'd said and done already. But now, my gosh.
So they fired the defensive coordinator Grantham and the offensive line coach since this game ended. And again, they should never give up 40 points to South Carolina. I mean, that's a but they were kind of soft on defense and kind of poorly coached, not playing with a lot of not playing hard, not playing a lot of intensity, and Grantham needed to go. He was going to be fired at the end of the season. So after this performance, they just pulled the trigger now.
They're like, pitch him overboard quick.
Well, yeah, pitch him overboard to save yourself, because if they do this again, Mullen's going to be thrown overboard behind him. So
that'll be the chum. The South Carolina is the team we play after Mississippi State and before Alabama. So the last thing we need, I'm not sure which I'm happier about. Mississippi State lost, so they're going to be coming into Jordan. I guess we're playing them in Jordan-Hare. In a foul mood. But then we play South Carolina, and they might still be preening around from putting the whoop-ass on Florida. So which is more – which are you more worried about now, Mississippi State or South Carolina?
Mississippi State's a much better team. South Carolina is not good. Florida's defense is like Stay Puft Marshmallow soft. So that's 40 points of – again, they're playing the third-string quarterback, and he had a good game and stuff, and we'll have to go on the road. And I get it, but Mississippi State is a much better team than South Carolina. Yeah.
Well, upcoming, we have Auburn basketball against Morehead State Tuesday. That may be today if you're listening to it on the day after I post it, late at night. And then Louisiana Monroe on Friday. Looking forward to seeing some Auburn hoops. In football, we've got Georgia at Tennessee. I mean, you know Georgia's going to win by 20 or more, but it could be an interesting game to watch just to see how it plays out.
Tennessee can hang around for a while.
We need to take notes on South Carolina at Missouri, because if South Carolina comes out and beats Missouri 40-17 – which could happen.
Yes.
Then I'm a little nervous about next, not this coming weekend, but the next weekend, that suddenly South Carolina's found an offense. A&M at Ole Miss. That should be interesting. That, to me, is the most intriguing matchup. Texas A&M at Ole Miss, because we know Ole Miss can move the ball and score, and we know Texas A&M can stop you from doing that.
That's right. It's a really fun matchup. That's the night game at ESPN. So our game is the noon game, which, as you know, and –
Oh! Wait a minute. When is our game? I was
our
thinking
it is the noon game.
I was thinking about
this is the night game. So.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was thinking about Arkansas LSU as an interesting matchup too, and I forgot that our game is
the 11 a.m. Jefferson Pilot time slot of death.
It needs a scream in there, doesn't it?
No.
Time slot of death. Bong. Ah! That's it.
You got to save that for Hate Week.
Yeah.
Overdo it.
God, I love Hate Week. Gotta get. All right. You know, when the basketball season starts tomorrow, it means we're only a matter of weeks and weeks until.
And March Madness, let's shock the world.
Can't wait. I play that now, John. I play it at the beginning of the season. And then we'll play it again later on, hopefully. We'll play it again come March. Fingers crossed. Kentucky at Vanderbilt. Kentucky's going to be mad. They're going to take it out on Vanderbilt. If I can't pick that the pick of the lock of the week, because God knows it's not a surprise. I'm going to move down here to Arkansas at LSU. And I'm going to say, because LSU gave everything they had and they still lost, Arkansas found the way to win. I'm going to say...
My cold, dead hands.
Lock of the week.
Take Arkansas to keep the ball rolling and beat LSU in Tiger Stadium just like we did.
I like it.
Yeah. And then New Mexico State, Alabama, who cares? Samford at... It's not even Stanford at Florida. It's that little college in Birmingham that Terry Bowden used to coach. Samford at Florida. Let's put it this way. Florida, you better not lose to Samford like you did to South Carolina. Almost beat Alabama, lost to South Carolina, and we're taking seriously the possibility of them losing to Samford. That says it all about Dan Mullen.
It's fair.
Yeah. All right. I think we've gotten to the end. Not too bad. I think we covered everything. Any final thoughts?
It's good to be home.
Yeah.
Going on the road was fun, but it's good to be home. And we need a home game. I think the offense is going to play better at home, and they got to get their mojo back and get things working again. So we'll see. I think it's this is a big game for us. Like you said, we got to get back on track, because there's not much time left in the season, and Mississippi State's too good to dilly dally around. So we got to We need a good crowd, even though it's an early kick, and we got to go out there and take care of business against Mississippi State.
I think that this game, it's much more important that we get our minds right. I think the team, the physical, all that is okay. I feel like we've got to get our psychology right for this home stretch. If we get down and let Texas A&M beat us again, it's just nothing good's going to come of it. We could still end this season 6-6, knock on wood. So we need to get our act together and win these next two and go into the Iron Bowl with a good chance of playing 100% and not playing at some percentage below that. So, all right, John, our time is up. We thank you for yours. Where you go, John?
Where you go, man?
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.